Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for joining our teleconference here once again. My name is Mark Roberts, owner of Affinity Asset Management, and thank you again for taking time out of your day to be a part of this teleconference and keeping yourself informed. Got a big turnout here today. I want to give a couple quick shout-outs to my buddy Mike Binstock up in Minneapolis, and a lot of his clients are on our teleconference here today, as well as to our girl here in the office, Kelly. Today's her birthday. I want to give her a shout-out and say a happy birthday to her. All right, so before I dive into all this fun stuff prepared for today's call, I don't want to forget to mention a couple of quick things. We're going to follow last week's lead on doing the teleconference, or maybe I should say 2 weeks ago. We're going to not do Q&A at the end just because of technical issues and sound issues. We just find it's actually better to do Q&A personally. You know, you can send us an email. You can give us a call. We can talk to you directly. We can hear your comments. We can hear your questions. We already know you and your situation. It's easier for us to tailor a response or comments back to you. So no Q&A at the end. I will do that personally for anybody who wants to call or email. Also, I don't want to commit right now to doing next Wednesday's teleconference. It's been a couple weeks since I did this teleconference just because there just hasn't been necessarily enough change to continue to do an email every Monday and a teleconference every Wednesday. So we're back this week to doing the email and the teleconference. Next week, I am going to do an email, but I'm not sure about the teleconference. Look in the email as to whether or not we're going to be doing the teleconference. It'll say in there. So get the rest of this week out of the way. We get into Monday. We'll know Monday whether or not we want to do a Wednesday teleconference or not. If there's enough information that I can put out there in a teleconference that's, you know, worthy of your time to be a part of. So just watch for that. All right, so today's call, this teleconference here, is kind of more about uncertainty. As you know, so the pandemic virus is unusual. The U.S. government telling people to not go to work or to go anywhere is also unusual. We're simply in uncharted times. Emotions are high. Projections and preliminaries and gut feelings seem to be on every news channel that you click on these days. That being said, projections, preliminaries, and gut feelings are not items to base our investment decisions off of. Facts and fundamentals, data points, and historical patterns are. You know, Affinity's perspectives on things come from us gathering information on a daily basis, and a lot of information on a daily basis from analysts and economists with all kinds of great companies that are out there. You know, we just simply have access to so much more raw and unbiased data and research than what investors do, than what you can get access to. We get access to people that don't put things on the internet. They're just strictly for advisor use only kind of stuff. And when we do these emails, and you can tell I'm copying and pasting and putting stuff into an email, like I do sometimes these teleconferences, you can tell I'm reading some of the stuff, because I want to quote it and say it exactly the way it was said. But keep in mind, we get so much stuff. I spend hours and hours every week. I shouldn't just say I. My whole team, our investment committee, spends hours and hours every week reading all of this stuff, all this information, these blogs, these emails, these teleconferences, everything that we newsletters, trying to find the consistent theme that we're looking for and not the one-off random stuff. We're also looking for stuff that is reusable, that's in layman's terms, not necessarily speaking to the financial advisor, but something that the average investor could understand. So we are really cutting and pasting to use what we think is the easiest stuff for people to read, but without sacrificing the tone of that letter or that newsletter, something that, you know, a wholesaler or an economist or an analyst puts out there. So we just have access to a lot of stuff, and obviously you guys know that. All right, so let's talk a little bit about performance here. And you've heard me talk in the past about data points. We've had data point 1, 2, and 3, and 3 so far is kind of like a moving target right now. The data point 1 was the high on February 19th. Data point 2 was the low on March 23rd. And data point 3 is kind of where we're at, kind of hovering. It hasn't hit a spot and come back down yet. It just kind of inched its way up, inched its way sideways, inched its way up. So I'm going to describe this to you in blocks of time. So February 19th to March 23rd, the stock market dropped 36% in 23 business days. I'm going to give this to you in business days. So take out holidays, take out weekends, 23 business days. So we'll call that block one, and that's data point one and two, showing you where the high was and where the low was. From March 23rd to April 17th, we had a quick 19 business days rebound, market coming back up 30%. So I'm going to call that block two, where it block one dropped 23 days, block two came up 19 days, and block two is basically identifying clearly where data point two was, where it dropped. The next block of time is from April 17th to May 22nd. The market moved less than 1% and that was 25 business days. I'm going to call that block three. So it went down, it's come up, it's gone sideways. You know, when I say sideways, it went less than 1% over 25 business days. That's basically a little over a month if you include all the weekends and the holidays in there. May 22nd until the end of last week, the market's up a little over 10% in 9 business days, obviously great. 9 business days, we're going to call that block four. And that's basically data point three is kind of a moving target right there. So block one was down 23 days, block two up 19 days, block three flat 25 days, block nine up 9 days. So clearly the biggest block of time was a flat spot. The second biggest block of time was the drop. So this is kind of the where we're at right now. I can't say this is a pattern. We only had 3 data points, so you can't say there's a pattern there. I'm just trying to identify blocks of time. And when you've heard me say in the past that we're kind of in a flat spot and there just hasn't been a lot of activity, here's a perfect example where I'm identifying 25 business days, a little over a month, where the market moved up or down less than 1%. Okay, so we've yet to see a single dip in the market worth buying in at since the initial drop of 35%. Yes, it's also very easy to be, you know, backwards looking and wonder the shoulda, woulda, coulda on thoughts on the pandemic, you know, if it's over or not. So ask yourself this. This is kind of how we look at it in your office. Ask yourself this. Do you truly feel that the coronavirus is gone and it's not coming back? Do you feel the economy will go back up immediately back to where it was before the coronavirus ever started? Do you feel the market has already recovered and has no additional dips coming? Do you feel that this year's presidential election won't affect the markets? Or even the recent trade drama with U.S. and China, do you think that's going to go away like it's been affecting us the last couple of years? You know, if that's truly how you feel that these things are gone, you know, that being said, you know, we want to hear from you. We know that you're listening to us and you're allowing us to manage and we're doing what we think is the best for you, because this is what I'm doing for my own personal money too. So it has nothing to do with an age thing. It's what's right for the market with these things that are lining up. So we're basically saying we want to hear from you. You know, the analogy is like, let's call it like a football game. You know, you get to the end of the first, you know, the first quarter, you can't really predict how the game's going to finish at the end of the first quarter. You can be excited. You could be, you know, frustrated. And look at the Chiefs last year. How many games did we have come from behind? The entire postseason come from behind. And, you know, we didn't turn the TV off just because we were up behind and we were behind double digits. We kept watching as the game continued to unfold. Now, of course, with the Chiefs, the domino effect of that year and those games and those seasons turned out great. But we have a lot still to come here with this whole coronavirus and this economic issue. Looking forward and trying to look at the psychology of this as to whether we stay in bonds for right now, what are the pros and cons of staying in bonds versus what are the pros and cons of, let's say, buying into the market? Out of our entire client base and all the money that we manage, we've only had a couple clients asked to get bought back in. Nobody's actually disagreed with any of our thinking. They just, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm comfortable with. And we're going to be okay with that. We understand the client. They understand the pros and cons. We feel like they understand the pros and cons. We're going to honor that. So take a listen to this. Let's say you stay in bonds for, you know, a while longer, like what we're doing right now, because we haven't had the fourth data point yet. We haven't had that second drop just yet to buy in. So if we stay in bonds, what are the pros and cons? The pros are, if we stay in bonds, if the market was to go up, then you lose out on making money quickly. Let's see here. If the market was to drop, then you won't lose much money is what I'm trying to say. So if you stay in bonds, the pros are if the market drops, you don't lose much money, and you have your money positioned in bonds to where we can quickly get out of bonds, buy into stocks at the next drop, therefore riding that wave back up. That's the positive. What's the cons? What's the negative of staying in bonds? Well, the market continues to go up, and you miss out on the growth, you know, right now. And that's what we call FOMO, F-O-M-O. It's kind of an industry thing, probably more of our office. We talk about it more. F-O-M-O, fear of missing out. So the con is staying in bonds is the fear of missing out. So let's say we go back into stocks right now, or at least some portion of your stocks right now. What are the pros and cons? So if we're going to stocks right now, the positive is if the market continues to go up, then you will capture those gains and make money. Yay. Cons are if the market drops and we finally get that fourth data point, then you're going to lose a lot of money very quickly. Simply put, you know, as investors, we have to ask ourselves what drives us more, the fear of losing money or the fear of missing out on growth? What drives you more? After, I think I looked this up, I think we are at 79 total days of going through this coronavirus, 79 business days on this coronavirus. Okay, I think we've gone through this long enough where people are starting to get that itch. You know, they're getting that itch where, okay, they want something to happen, and, you know, they can't force it. I can't force it. The market's going to do what it's going to do. But we can have difference of opinions on that kind of stuff, and we want to make sure that we're honoring clients for this stuff. So let me talk a little bit about some red flags that we're seeing here. And we'll talk about PE ratios. PE is price-to-earnings ratio. So without getting into too much technical on that for today, but let me just kind of give you some numbers. On the Dow, because that's the most widely looked at stock market index, is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. 1 year ago, the PE ratio for the Dow was 17.84. As of last Friday, it's 22.9. That's an increase of 28% in one calendar year on a PE ratio. That's huge. That's a huge increase. The Russell 2000, which is small cap stocks, 1 year ago was 35.63. Right now it's 54.63. That's a 53% increase in PE ratio. The NASDAQ technology, 1 year ago was 22.83. Now it's 29.8 or 29.1. That's a 27% increase. We are seeing PE ratios spiking right now. So conclusion is, we're here for you, okay? We do receive endless amounts of data from analysts and economists, and we do have a plan in place to get back into the market. We just need the market to cooperate and give us a little bit of a little wiggle, a little down. We're not asking the market to drop all the way back down to 18.5 like it did on March 23rd. We just want to get the market to have a little bit of a drop so we have a data point to buy in at and feel comfortable with that we're buying in at a better spot than where we were. We never want you guys to not feel like you can't call us. It's your money, and we always want to make sure that we're honoring that. So kind of get the theme here is we're trying to say that we want to listen to you, but we're in super uncertain times right now, and we might be totally right. We might be mostly right. You might be totally right, or you might be partially right. Either way, we want you to sleep at night knowing the decisions that you're making. Right now you're letting us make it, but if you want us to make adjustments, we'll do that for you. I'm just saying it's okay to call us and let us know, or you just give yourself some more time to think about this stuff and think about the data I'm giving you. So let me give you some market update stuff. Last week, the stock market was up 4.9%, so good week. Monday this week was up 1.7. Tuesday was down 1.09. So Monday and Tuesday almost washed each other out. Today, the market is down right now, and as I'm looking at the TV, Federal Reserve is talking, and I don't really see much out of that right now, so I'm going to come back to this. All right, since February 19th, the stock market's still negative 7.07. That's pretty huge. The market dropped 35%, and now it's only down a negative 7%. That is a very fast rebound, so that's that second block of time and that fourth block of time that I mentioned. The stock market, I'll use the S&P 500. It's a bigger barometer. Over the last 30 days, it's up a little over 9%. Our bond model is up 2.25%. Can't compare those two because one's 100% bonds with very little risk. The other is all stocks, 100% stocks, and a ton of risk. Not a fair comparison, but we also are comparing a time where the last 2 weeks of the last 30 days has been two good weeks that the stock market's given us. And that's why we're sensing from our clients the itch, okay, did we miss getting back in? Is there not going to be a fourth data point? Is there not going to be any kind of a hiccup? Nobody seems to be wanting to really override us and, hey, give me full in the market. Let's go all into the market right now. Nobody's asking us that. But just by the questions that are being asked are good, legit questions. This is your money, and you got questions. And even if it's questions that we've already answered, you just kind of need to hear it again or you need to hear it a different way. Guys, that's what we're here for. So let me give you some tidbits. The last stimulus package runs out of funding by the end of July. It is possible, too probable, that we'll see another $1 trillion, maybe even more, in stimulus passed in the coming months. Now, put yourself in President Trump's shoes. Things are looking a little bit better. But right now, the Democrats, Biden, they have a lot of bullets in their gun right now, of all kinds of things, but now they got a lot of stuff in their gun of recent stuff to use. I wouldn't be surprised if Trump can get Congress to sign off on another stimulus package to continue things moving in the right direction to get us at least to the end of this year, get us at least to election time so people are feeling good because they can't really blame anybody on a pandemic, but you can blame a lot of other things on the president, for example. So he wants things to look really as good as possible to get reelected. Now, Pat here in my office, he likes to call these stimulus package sweeteners. As long as the government continues to give us more stimulus money, it will continue to be a Band-Aid for now, but will create its own set of problems that we're going to have to deal with later down the road. the extra $600 Americans are getting in weekly unemployment benefits ends next month. Americans who have been laid off from their jobs because of the coronavirus pandemic have been able to collect an additional $600 a week, $2,400 a month, in unemployment benefits on top of what they're already getting from the state. That extra relief was part of the $2.7 trillion stimulus package known as the CARES Act, which obviously you've heard me talk about that many times already. But next month, if lawmakers fail to act, Americans who are out of work will see that $600 every week disappear from an unemployment check, and they'll just get their normal unemployment check. The supplemental $600 Americans receive has been controversial, especially given that two-thirds of laid-off workers receive more money from the unemployment benefits than they did from their jobs. But at the same time, proponents of the extra $600 say that decreasing those benefits could cost the country even more jobs. If those benefits were extended through January of next year, then five out of every six recipients on unemployment would be receiving more in benefits than they would if they were working 6 months ago, over the last 6 months, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Guys, we probably all know people. I personally know people. I'm not going to say names, but I personally know people who have been laid off, who have been offered to go back to their job now because things have opened back up. And they are declining to go back to work because their unemployment checks are bigger than their job. Why would they? They don't have any financial incentive to go work. They might as well stay home, play golf, do whatever, and collect more money. But how can they get away with that? It's because they're telling their employer, I'm afraid for my health. Just because the government says this, I fear my health, I don't want to come back to work just yet. And that is kind of keeping their job, let's just say, kind of being held for them, because not a lot of employers are going to lay off people or fire them completely from being furloughed. Oh, you're not coming back to work now? Okay, you're terminated permanently. That's just probably bad PR more than anything else. But I personally know people who can go back to work who are choosing not to because their unemployment's higher. This is a problem. This is partly why the stock market is doing so well, and this is why the economy is going to continue to build up, I don't want to say a bubble, that kind of sounds drastic, but build up this big problem that is going to be dealt with. And when this problem hits, it's going to be hitting a lot of things, and then the stock market's going to react to it as well. The U.S. economy officially – okay, so here's a quote from Moody's chief economist, Mark Zandi. He says, the U.S. economy officially entered in recession in February. I don't like how he says that because technically speaking, we're not into recession until you have two negative quarters in a row. That won't be announced until July after the first and second quarter are completed and we can officially be called a recession. But just because of the massive numbers and how they dropped off, that's why he's calling it we went into recession in February. It's the semantics of words, but in technicality, we're not really in recession just yet. The U.S. could slide into a second coronavirus-induced recession this year if the federal government does not pass additional economic relief measures, according to Moody's chief economist, Mark Zandi. Policymakers have done a good job, I think, to date, but they've got more work to do, Zandi said in an interview with Fox Business. I don't think they can sit back and say, oh, the recovery is now underway, and we don't have any more to do. If they don't, the odds of going back into recession this year are pretty high. He cautions that the economy won't fully bounce back from this crisis until the virus fully recedes, so long as there's a threat of a second wave of COVID-19 infections. Businesses won't hire or expand. Consumers are going to remain cautious. Even if businesses start to reopen, he said, unemployment will likely remain in the double digits. That's a lot of households that are going to be going through a lot of financial pressure, he said. If they don't get the additional support, we're going to pull back and the economy can go into a recession even longer. Now, I agree with all of that. It's a little bit more dramatic words, and pretty much every economist we get data from all says that same thing. But what this doesn't say is people are still paying their bills right now because unemployment's so high. And two-thirds of Americans are collecting more on unemployment than what they were working is what they're saying. So bills are still being paid. The problem is when the unemployment starts to drops off drastically, how do bills get paid? People are going to start going into their investments, going to their savings to take out money to pay their bills. You're going to start to see foreclosures. You're going to start to see financial stress in the banks. These are like things that are just lining up that you can see lining up. And if the government continues to put out stimulus packages, it's going to continue to be Band-Aids and kind of help things along. But in itself, it's kind of like helping one thing, but it causes two more other problems. One of the analogies I heard years ago that I thought was brilliant from, I don't even remember where it was from, to be honest with you. It's kind of like, and it was is a reference to Obama when Obama came in and became president. When Obama became president, we had a lot of economic problems, huge problems. And he's like, he's on the Air Force One, and it's a four jet airplane, Air Force One, and two engines are out on that plane. Two of the four engines are out. So while in mid-flight, you have engineers crawling out of the plane in flight, going to rob parts from one of the engines to move it over to the other side of the airplane to fix one of those engines so it can still run on two engines but balance one engine on each side and try to fix it in flight. That's kind of what we're doing right now, is we're trying to Band-Aid fix things that are not permanent fixes. And these are building up economic problems. It's going to cause lots of other things that will come down the road. Okay, so though the nation's unemployment rate dropped to 13.3 in May versus the 14.7, that's good. It was at 14.7 in April. It's 13.3 in May, so that's really good. That comes with an asterisk, and we have seen this in countless articles. The Bureau of Labor Statistics said that it had misclassified data May, April, and March, those last 3 months. Without this error, the unemployment rates would have actually been, in May, it would have been 16.3 instead of 13.3. That's actually 23% higher. In May, that was May. May was, should have been 16.3 instead of 13.3. For April, it reported 14.7, but it's actually 19.7. That's 34% higher in April than what it reported. It's 23% higher in May than what it reported. That being said, these errors have caused the numbers to look a lot better than they are, therefore giving the stock market unreasonable enthusiasm. What started off as a medical scare for our lives due to a contagious virus that was really killing humans, that went into an economic problem due to the government reacting to protect our lives, but basically by shutting things down. So that caused the economic problems. Now this is turning into what we see as financial concerns, with the markets moving much faster than the economy and P.E. ratio spiking to numbers that we haven't seen since 1999, just before the 2000.com bubble correction. And I don't know if you remember that correction. You remember the whole Y2K and our computer's going to be able to turn over, all that kind of stuff. Right after the whole Y2K in 2000, we went into the biggest recession, the biggest market correction we've had since the Great Depression. The stock market dropped 45% in that window of time, and at that time, it was the biggest thing we've seen. Now, I've been doing this, let's see here, 24 years. I started in 1996. This is 4 years into my career doing this that we had this major issue going on. And so I remember this very, very vividly early in my career. Now, since then, the 2008 correction that we had was actually even bigger. It dropped 55% during that 2008 correction. It dropped 45% in the 2000 correction. So my point is, even in 2008, we didn't see P.E. ratios spiking the way it did for that market correction. We're seeing P.E. ratios spike right now like it did for the 2000.com. So the 2000.com bubble was, let's say, a lot of financial problems. Silicon companies, Silicon Valley companies, tech companies, you know, overpriced, and that means the P.E. ratios were out of whack. 2008 was due to the pendulum swinging on regulations and people buying houses that were too big that they can't afford, and they're foreclosing on houses. Therefore, banks struggled, properties, the real estate market, you know, that was 2008 was all about economics. 2000 was about more stock market fundamentals. That's what we're seeing today. Now we have an economic problem, and we're seeing a stock market fundamental problem. So what I'm saying is what we're going through now partially looks like 2000, partially looks like 2008 from those two perspectives of economics and stock market fundamentals. This is sort of like a dominoes being set up. They haven't started to fall one over the other yet, but we are now seeing, after, let's call it 79 business days, we're now starting to see the dominoes at least line up. And that's what our concern is. And this is kind of what we've been saying. And it's not us. This is not Affinity Asset Management's interpretation of this. This is really us regurgitating and saying what we're hearing from constant analysts and economists that are out there. All right, so let's get off the tidbits. Let's talk about some facts. Coronavirus, 7.3 million cases globally, 414,000 deaths. In the U.S., 2,046,000 cases. Now, that's up last week from 1.8 million. It's basically up 149,000 cases. That's a 7.8% increase. So the thing is we're still increasing. We're still having people getting diagnosed. Deaths now are up to 114,000. Last week we reported it was at 108, which is a almost 5,900 increase, which is 5.4% increase from last week. Again, still increasing. Kansas, 10,700 cases, 238 deaths. Missouri, 15,000 cases, 855 deaths. All right, so let me give you some copy and paste here from some news as well as Animus Economist that we get data from. J.P. Morgan, start with them. And by the way, let me just say here, so when we don't do an email right now, and we're trying to do these emails every Monday, and we don't do a teleconference on a Wednesday, it's because information is a little bit dry right now, and there's nothing new coming out from Analyst Economists that we haven't already been reading and we haven't already been saying. So we don't want to waste your time sending you emails that saying the same thing over and over that we've said before. We're trying to make sure that it's fresh, it's updated, it's a little bit new, it's a little bit more updated. Is something, because we don't want to send you emails, is what I'm trying to say, that you're going to just start discarding because it's the same thing over and over and over. You stop reading them, you just start deleting them. You stop joining the teleconferences because, he's saying the same thing over and over. We want to make this stuff relevant. And so if we don't do an email or we don't do a teleconference, it's because all the stuff we've had from the last email or the last teleconference isn't really anything worth reporting, isn't really anything new to report on, isn't, we think, worthy of your time to probably listen to. So that's why we're doing that. So J.P. Morgan, in a year of almost unmitigated disaster, the May jobs report was a pleasant surprise. Instead of further heavy job losses and a rising unemployment rate, the report showed the economy adding 2.5 million payroll jobs, with unemployment rate falling to 3.3 from the 14.7, which I reported a minute ago was falsely off, or greatly off, I should say. The current recession, although very deep, is to some extent a bookend recession. It started with a virus and should end abruptly with a vaccine. Because of this, the full correction in the form of a 34% market drop that we saw from February 19th to March 23rd was probably overdone. However, with better than expected May jobs reports, the recession is causing major damage to American economy and U.S. corporations. Moreover, massive fiscal and monetary stimulus today should mean higher inflation, higher interest rates, higher taxes down the road. And I don't know if you know this. I'm a little bit of a nerd on some history issues, especially history in our economy and in my professional world. Most tax increases are usually signed into place the second term of president. You don't see a lot of first-term presidents get elected and then come out of the gates in that first 4 years raising taxes, because it's going to be a whole lot harder to get reelected. Not saying reelecting Trump or Biden, whatever, is the right thing or wrong thing. I want to get into politics, but we have a pretty sizable chance of taxes going up somewhere between 2021 and the next 4 years if Trump gets reelected, because he'll be a second term. Second termer, he's not worried about reelection. He's trying to fix things. He's trying to heal things. He's going to do what he's got to do that. And we know taxes have to go up, and we are right now at historically low tax rates. So you compound all these economic problems. You compound some stock market scares, probably got to have some more W shapes coming in the stock market that we haven't yet seen yet. And then you throw in higher taxes, higher inflation, higher interest rates. That's going to drastically alter a lot of things from economics to the stock market. Okay, so from FS Investments, markets are experiencing a moment of optimism after suffering the sharpest drop into a bear market in history. The S&P rose 12.7% in April, the biggest monthly gain since 1987, and is up 28.8% from its bottom on March 23rd. The economy, meanwhile, is in apparent freefall. The COVID-19 pandemic caused the widespread shelter-in-place orders that shuttered businesses and caused massive layoffs. GDP fell 4.8% in quarter one, the biggest drop since the Great Recession, and the expectations for quarter two are the stuff of nightmares. Estimates range from a decline of a negative 15% to 50% is what they're at. 15 to 50, that's a huge range there. The estimates ranging from a decline of 15 to 50% in the second quarter. We'll get this information next month in July. Anything in that range would be a record-setting quarterly contraction on top of the contraction that we just had in the first quarter of 4.8%. It turned off like a light switch. It's going to turn back on like a dimmer switch. I've heard that over and over and over, and these numbers continue to support that. I think July, maybe towards the end of July, might realistically be like, let's say, our first legit chance to see any serious market movement to want to go up and, let's say, surpass the February 19th high. or the market's going to start to have some volatility, and we're going to start to see that fourth data point. We're going to see a drop, because in July we're going to see June's unemployment numbers, and we're also going to get second quarter GDP. And now we're into July getting this data, which is probably likely to come towards the end of July, because it takes about a month for those numbers to be reported. So now we're towards the end of July, getting close to August. Now we're starting major election debates, Trump and Biden. And that's going to get nasty. I thought the last one was pretty nasty. I think this is going to be nasty. And more importantly, they're not going to talk as much in this election about like super high level stuff like foreign policy, taxes, healthcare, Obamacare. Those might be some topics they talk about, but I really have a feeling a lot of these topics are going to be about today's situation. What the government, what Trump did or didn't do with, you know, coronavirus, what they did or didn't do with these stimulus packages in the economy and the stock market. These are going to be like a lot of wounds they're going to be pouring salt on in these debates that are like super fresh on today's stuff, and not these, you know, like high level big topics that a lot of times they talk about that we don't necessarily quite see the direct impact on us with some of those big topics, but these are. All right, so staying on with FS investments. The disparity between market performance and the economy is top of mind for most investors these days. At the root of this is most the concern that they have missed out on the rebound. Remember that fear of missing out, FOMO. However, we have learned from one lesson from multiple economic cycles, credit cycles, and bouts of volatility. It's the danger of catching a falling knife. In other words, we can look back at the graph and be upset that we missed the bottom. Investing is a marathon, not a sprint. Right now, we may be seeing some of the worst of the economic data. April, likely, hopefully, will be the cruelest unemployment report of this cycle, and job losses will hopefully slowly be going forward, doing better. However, the economic ramifications of the COVID-19 pandemic are only just the beginning to unfold. Again, the dominoes. Only beginning to unfold. Markets are naturally forward-looking, which can easily swing both ways. Should the pandemic last longer, or should a surge of new cases cause another round of shutdowns, markets could react with fresh volatility. Fundamentals still matter, and right now the future is less certain than ever. During these earnings seasons that is just now winding down, fully one-third of companies abstained from giving 2020 guidance, meaning one-third of these companies out there didn't give us any information on themselves. Now, first off, that is another unprecedented event. For companies not to report their data, one-third did not report their data. And so one-third is an unprecedented event, or it's basically a non-event is what they're saying. So it's like for investors, I like this little quote here, for investors, it's like trying to navigate a plane through the Himalayas without a window or a good map. If these companies don't report their data, then it's hard for investors, you, me, mutual fund managers, ETF managers to want to buy into their stocks, sell their stocks, if they're not reporting data. One-third of these companies didn't report this stuff. That right there is red flags, lots of red flags. We expect the Fed to continue to be active with policies that pull us away from the cliff of financial crisis, but the economy is facing severe challenges which will feed through the company's balance sheets, revenues, and profits for the next several quarters at least. That was from FS Investments. From BlackRock. BlackRock gets a little technical with their words sometimes, and so I'm just apologizing in advance for the next couple of parts here. The scale and speed of the policy response, meaning government's policy response, has been greater than at any movement in peacetime history, fundamentally transforming the core tenets of global policy frameworks and financial markets. We view the economic impact and policy responses as two key signposts for gauging the virus shock, and compare our assessment of the lost national income across major economies with policy measures announced to date. The fiscal response more than covers the initial impact in the U.S. Once we factor in the spillover of the full economy, the fiscal policy response globally falls short. Yet, the situation improves when monetary policies are accurately accounted for. This is especially striking here in the U.S., again, because we had such a big stimulus package, and then we came out with a second round of stimulus package, not nearly as big, but it took it from 2.2 to basically 2.7, and constant talks of a third stimulus package. Major economies may still struggle to entirely bridge the gap left by the plunge in demand, income, and cash flow, despite the unprecedented policy measures, in our view. We see a risk in policy fatigue, meaning the government, if things start looking better, then we might not see that next stimulus package, is what they're saying. Hold on, I lost my place here. We see a risk in policy fatigue leading to an exit or a retrenchment too soon, especially in the U.S. The U.S. labor markets unexpectedly improved in May, showing signs that policy interventions were cushioning the blow from the shock and highlighting the risk that policymakers may give up on relief measures sooner than necessary. So they're basically saying, if the Fed doesn't continue to take action, Congress doesn't continue to give us stimulus packages, we're going to have some problems. And that's literally what they're trying to say. So when they say policy, that's what they're talking about. The bottom line, the policy revolution is a near-term positive for markets, but in the absence of guide rails, might not be in the medium term. They're not even talking long-term at this point. They're just talking that medium term, we're going to have some problems. All right, now here's a new quote. I've not given this to you guys before. From CNBC's Jim Cramer. Most of you probably know who Jim Cramer is. He gets a little hot in the color, definitely gets very animated. We put some stuff in here on him because I think I just liked that he's kind of summarizing some technical stuff and try to put it in layman's terms. CNBC's Jim Cramer on Monday expressed concern about the stock market's recent rally getting too far ahead of the economy's recovery from the depths of the coronavirus pandemic. Where are the sellers? Cramer asked. It's almost as if people decided COVID is over. The Friday rally, meaning last Friday, as sweet as it was off the unemployment number, was not brought out by sellers, did not bring out the sellers. I often think there has to be sellers at a certain level, he said. Cramer acknowledged that states reopening their economies is bullish for the stock market. He speculated on whether people are feeling safe to buy stocks because they are feeling safer from the coronavirus. However, he warned, it's as if whatever happened has vanished. It's kind of like we're setting the world back to February. Like everything just automatically goes back to February before February 19th. And that's, I thought, well stated by him. All right, Washington Post. The enormous positive run has prompted cheerful predictions that the stock market is telling us that better days are near at hand. Despite more than 109,000 deaths from the coronavirus pandemic, tens of millions of recently unemployed people last month reported employment gain, notwithstanding civil unrest in cities and towns throughout the country, and political and social divisiveness, which I suspect may be our country's biggest problem of all. So we're basically talking about the death in Minneapolis and all the protests that we're seeing. I think that might be a bullet for Biden to talk about during the debates as to what Trump is or isn't doing enough of or something of that nature. And now we're getting into a race issue in politics, and I don't know how that's going to work, and that could cause more anger, more frustration, therefore cause more volatility. Don't know. We'll have to wait until we get there. Go on to say here, a misclassification error made in May's unemployment rate looked better than it is. So basically, again, I think I've now quoted now three times in this teleconference today about the big numbers that were reported that were wrong for April and May's unemployment numbers, how they were actually quite a bit higher than what they reported. Now to the main point. The stock market is supposed to be a predictive indicator, right? So if the stocks are going up so quickly, isn't that the market trying to tell us something? Question mark. Not necessarily. I'd love to join in the happy buzz, but I'm not at all sure about the markets being an accurate predicting mechanism, either up or down. Why are we seeing such extreme swings? I sure don't think it's because the changing perceptions on part of the investors. Rather, I think it has a lot to do with momentum. This is why I put this part in here. And this was, again, hold on, back this up. This was the Washington Post, this last part. Rather, I think a lot has to do with momentum, where prices keep going up because they're going up, and they're going down because they're going down. Sure, that's not what they teach us in Markets 101, which I agree with. My degree is in finance and going through economics, all these things that I went through in college, this is not the stuff we were taught. Even when I was at the Wharton School of Business for a time being, that was not the stuff that we talked about. It's not on this momentum. But I think it's happening because trading volumes these days, consistently largely due to computer trading with one another, not because people analyzing the market bets. So what this is basically saying is, in today's stock market environment, there is so much robo-trading being done where, and I'll tell you this, I have a lot of friends who are financial advisors who do what I do and manage client money, but they really don't do it the way that we do it. They outsource all of the responsibility of all the money management to a third party. And their clients don't know that. The clients think that the advisor is doing it. The client thinks the advisor and the staff is doing it, and they don't. They're outsourcing it to a third party. And not that that's a bad thing. I guess it's better to outsource it than for them to do it themselves if they don't have the staff or the technology to do it. I guess that's a better way to go. But point is, those clients and those financial advisors are not having a finger on doing something or not doing something, buying or selling fully, partially. They don't have control over that. There's a whole lot of computer-generated trades, partly to what caused the big drop in 2008. It dropped more than it should have dropped because of computer trades. You can say here in 2020 that were we due to drop 35% because of this? Probably not, but we were due for a big drop. We were due for a market correction. I mean, we've been going up 11 years. We're due for something. Coronavirus should have prompted it, sure. But do we really truly deserve to drop 35%? A lot of that had to do with computer-generated trades. And so that's kind of the problem out there is you got clients like you guys working with financial advisors like us who are more hands-on, where we're taking data from analysts and economists, we're using our technology, we're using all of our history, and we're doing things prudently, not just because numbers hit a certain number on the computer, trades automatically trade. We just not the right way to go. Okay, past all the boring stuff there, let's finish up on a couple things here. Opportunities. Because we're kind of stuck in the office, things are opening up, and some of us are getting back to work. I'm going to tell you that we're not seeing clients just yet. So, yes, technically we can see clients. We've only, I think, probably since the last couple of two, 3 weeks, I think we've only maybe had two people come in the office. We're just taking the stance in our office that we've had a few people that have had cancer. We have spouses of the people in my office who've had cancer, and because of that, their immune system is weakened and doesn't take much for them to get sick. And so we're just taking extra precaution. We can still do our jobs, and we can still be super effective through Zoom.com, through the phone, emails, all these kinds. We can still be super effective. We don't have to see people face-to-face. Even to do paperwork, we can do things electronically. So we, at Affinity Asset Management, are still finding ways to keep things moving forward in a super positive way without having to be at risk of anything. So having said that, we've taken an initiative throughout this time of putting things out there more viral. I'm doing a lot of live events myself, putting things out there for my clients and just other people to hear without trying to sell anything. You can see this whole teleconference is not me selling anything. It's just keeping people informed. So today, for example, today is my third live event that I've done today. So here's some opportunities for you to get extra information. Every Wednesday, we have what we call the Community Cafe. Me, an attorney, and a bank trust officer have come together, three of us, who I can speak wonderful about both those guys. And the three of us come together after many, many, many years of working together and many, many years of sharing clients and helping each other and helping each other's clients. We came together. We created this group called the Community Cafe, and two of the three of us every week are talking, just having a chat, like over a cup of coffee, and you guys get to watch us talk. Last week and this week, we talked about how income taxes can go up at retirement time, and last week was part one, this week was part two. Next week, it's going to be talking about charitable giving and how you can use RMDs for charitable giving and how charitable giving can be a tool in your toolbox for the things you want to accomplish. So that's every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. We send out an invitation to all our clients through email, and then we also do it on Facebook. So I'm streaming it live on Zoom.com, and we're streaming it live on Facebook. So anybody that's a friend of mine that follows me on Facebook, my personal Facebook, you can click on it and kind of see us, or you can look at it in your newsfeed and watch it later. So that we call that Community Cafe. We're doing that every Wednesday. So far, and we don't have any stop date just in mind yet, but we're doing weekly webinars. I am with an estate planning attorney, Glenn Stockton, on estate planning, pros and cons of wills, pros and cons of trust, pros and cons of not having anything done at all. What's a HIPAA release? Powers of attorney. Got a scary story that just came into us yesterday about a client who's only 73, who's been dealing with dementia for some time, being taken forcefully from her home, being abused by somebody in her family, supposedly, don't know all the facts, and put her in a care facility, but yet she has no power of attorney in place. She's got nobody to help her with paying the bills, getting money out to pay the new bills of where she's moving to and things like this. This stuff can happen to any of us. So we're doing weekly webinars on estate planning, and that's typically every Tuesday. and it's typically either 11 or 12 o'clock, you know, midday. I started this week, started today, and I'll be doing it, you know, about three times a month. Workshops, kind of like what I used to do in public, but now I'm doing webinars on Social Security and taxes, and not workshop, it's not right, a webinar on Social Security and taxes. And we did one today. Gosh, we had a great turnout for that. Next week, it's Tuesday, June 16th at 6 o'clock at night, and then Wednesday, the next day, June 17th at 11 o'clock in the day. So next week, we're doing one evening, one day one for those people. You guys want information on any of these things, the community cafe, the estate planning webinars, the Social Security webinars, Social Security and tax webinars, let my office know. Get a hold of Stacy. You can even email her if you want. Her email address is Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, at AffinityAsset.com. Shoot an email. Tell her you'd like to attend. She'll shoot you a link. She'll get you the information. That way you can click on and join it. So to finish up, reminder, might skip next week's teleconference. I won't really know until we get to Monday. We'll make the announcement in the Monday email. I'm definitely committing to Monday's email. I'm just not committing yet to a Wednesday teleconference just yet. Referrals, I just want to say thank you to all the referrals. We've been getting lots of referrals. We're still doing the Amazon gift card, the random drawing of 9 out of every 10 people that give us referrals and they turn into clients. We're doing random 9 out of 10 drawings for an Amazon gift card to say thank you. You got advice or you need advice, you got questions, you need opinions from us, call and talk to us. If you know what you want, I want to do this or I need this, you know, that's what we call more of a service-based thing, shoot us an email. After these teleconferences, after these emails, we kind of do get flooded a little bit. Maybe pace yourself out. Maybe call us tomorrow or something or shoot us an email. You know, a lot of us in our office use any one of our emails to reach out to us. Having said that, I've been now talking for a solid 45 minutes. I just want to, again, thank you all so, so very much for being a part of these teleconferences, listening in, reading my emails. Trust me, I wish things were differently. I'd love to get a nice sharp drop in the market, give us a good buying opportunity. We all want that. It's got to come. Things are lining up. Don't know when it's going to be. Don't know how much it's going to be. Again, day by day, we have the plan in place, but we just need the market to give us some cooperation so we can take care of it. But in the meantime, you have questions, you have concerns, or you want to implement something different, it's your money. We want to respect that. We want to honor that. We want to implement what you want us to implement. If not, we're going to continue doing things, what we've been doing for you, moving down the path that we're moving down. So I want to wish everybody health and safety. Thank you so much for your time here today. I appreciate all your trust and faith that you have in myself, our financial advisors, and Affinity Asset Management. Take care. You guys have a great rest of your day.